You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey there, listeners. We mentioned a couple episodes ago that we would be re-releasing some old episodes for you to enjoy. And because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we went into our archives all the way back to episode 44 of the podcast, all about catcalling. We love to listen back to old episodes to see how much the show has grown and changed. Thank you so much for supporting our show. We appreciate all the love we have gotten from all you ragers over the last 4 years. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And I actually, weirdly, kind of enjoyed researching this episode.
You did?
Strangely enough.
Why would that be strange, though?
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a topic that is altogether super exciting, and definitely, like, our personal experiences are not fun with this topic, but researching it and kind of, like, some of the history that I learned about it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Agreed.
And also, just off the top of this episode, can I apologize to our listeners? Maybe not apologize, but just acknowledge that I say the word interesting a lot.
I've never realized that.
I have, and I'm like, I really need to find another word.
Fascinating.
You know what? I said fascinating a bunch as well. I don't know.
Interesting, fascinating, that's where my vocabulary ends.
And, there's nothing else.
Okay.
Good. Then I feel justified. All right. So, as I'm sure you could tell by the title of this episode, unless you are just, you know, binging and haven't looked at your phone, which we encourage, you are listening to an episode on catcalling and street harassment.
Meow.
So this is one that has been on our list to do since the very beginning.
Since the birth.
Yes, since the conception of the podcast. because I feel like, especially in the last several years, there's been a lot of talk about catcalling.
Yeah.
And
a lot of videos made.
Yes. There's famously that one video of that woman walking
down
through
the
New York,
yeah,
you know, getting catcalled for 10 hours.
Yeah.
And that video, actually, which I didn't realize until I was doing research for this episode, got a lot of criticism because it edited out a lot of the white guys who were catcalling her and left in
shady
a lot of men of color.
That's not cool.
Super shady. But there's always the talk or the discussion when we start talking about catcalling people, mostly men, some women, who are like, guys, it's just a compliment.
Ugh.
What's the problem?
No, it's scary.
It's super scary.
It's fucking scary. Like, I literally was talking to you the other night about how I was at 7-Eleven at night by myself, and I, like, this guy held the door open for me. I went in, and then when I left, he, like, got the door for me again, and I think I probably said, like, thank you, you know, whatever. And then he was like, where are you going, girl? What are you doing? Uh-uh. Why do you look so sad? I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I'm by myself in, like, a probably not the best area, and this dude is like talking to me and he's like, why do you look so sad?
None of your fucking business.
Why are you upset, girl? I know. I'm like, what the fuck?
And the thing is about this, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure it will be a recurring theme throughout this episode, is there is no way, at this point, I believe that there is no way that a man doesn't realize that
they realize and they just
women
don't
are
care.
Afraid. That they women
must,
are afraid.
They must just really not
no,
care.
No, they don't care because catcalling isn't about complimenting a woman.
No.
It's about power.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like this, you know, it's the same thing with any form of sexual harassment or sexual assault. It's
yeah.
about power in public spaces. They want to make you feel unsafe.
Yeah.
And part of how you know that that's the case is that men very rarely catcall women when they're with other men.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm with my boyfriend or with a male friend, I don't think I've ever gotten catcalled
yeah.
when I've been with a male friend.
Because that's showing it's not a compliment.
Right. It's absolutely not a compliment. It's not just like, hey. And listen, I've actually had men compliment me.
But it's still in a weird, I've gotten compliments like, I like your shirt, but it's in such a way where, like, I'm walking to my car and they'll, like, holler out. It's
oh,
like,
no, no.
Weird.
That's still catcalling.
Yeah,
if you're
exactly.
yelling at me on the street, a compliment doesn't need to be yelled at a stranger on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I've had men compliment me. That's the thing, is people are like, you're killing romance. You're saying that a man can never say that a woman is beautiful. And I'm like, no, I've had a man tell me I was
context.
Beautiful in a non-threatening manner and
yeah.
situation that was non-threatening.
Yeah.
And where I didn't feel fearful at all. If you are following me or yelling at me
yeah.
or cursing at me or saying something lewd to me on the street when I'm walking alone at night.
Yeah.
That's not a compliment.
You should be doing everything in your power to make sure that that person feels safe.
Safe. Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, you're trying to make me feel unsafe.
Exactly.
I don't see any other, you know, I just don't see how it could be anything else.
Yeah.
You know? So should we maybe talk a little bit about what street harassment is? I feel
yes.
like we kind of just detailed
jumped
a lot
into
of it.
It. Yeah, let's talk about it.
But sexual harassment is typically of...
You mean street harassment?
Yes.
Okay.
Street harassment is the sexual harassment
there you go.
Of typically cisgendered or transgendered women in public spaces and typically by men who are strangers. And this
mm-hmm.
includes both verbal and nonverbal behavior. Here are some statistics for you. A nationally represented study sponsored by Stop Street Harassment found that 65% of all women and 25% of all men have experienced street harassment. That 65% seems low to me.
Right. I've got a lot of statistics from that survey as well, and that was kind of my feeling. I read that 80% of women endure at least frequent street harassment. That sounds like a fair...
80?
80, yeah.
Yeah. That sounds fair to me.
45% feel they can't go alone to public spaces of women, sorry. 50% of women have to cross the street to find alternate routes to avoid harassment.
Yes.
26 claim to be in a relationship to avoid harassment. That seems low. I feel like most girls do that, like at a bar or anywhere, like when someone
oh,
starts...
Oh, you mean
you're
claim
like,
to be.
Claim to be
oh,
in a relationship.
Yes.
Like, oh, I have a boyfriend. To,
oh,
like,
yes.
push
I've done that.
Away.
I mean... I remember one time, you know, before I had an actual engagement ring,
right.
one time I was wearing a fake engagement ring for a show that
yeah.
I was going to. I was, like, stopping at the store to pick up something before I went to a show, and my character was married in it, and there was a guy, like, following me around the grocery store and,
mm-hmm.
like, hollering at me through the grocery store, and finally,
ugh.
Like, I just turned around and I was, like, sorry, and, like, showed him my, like... ring.
But you shouldn't even have
no,
to do that.
You
like,
should
it's
not
so
have
shitty.
To do that. You shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to tell a man that you quote-unquote belong to another man
or
for him
even
to leave
just
you
apologize.
Alone.
Like, sorry, I can't, you know, go for your advances. Like, no, it's like you shouldn't do that to begin with.
You
like, no one should behave that way.
You shouldn't have to do
that. Yeah, exactly.
But you do that often. Women do that often to keep themselves safe in situations
oh, yeah.
like that.
But oh, but even then, sometimes, like, even when I'm in relationships, like, I have
oh,
a
yeah.
boyfriend, they're like, oh, where is he? Where is
oh,
this? It's
yeah.
like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Every woman has heard the classic line, your boyfriend doesn't let you have friends.
Ugh!
I've had guys say that to me on countless occasions. Your boyfriend doesn't let you have friends.
It's like, you don't want to be my friend. You don't
yeah.
want to be
no,
my
you
friend.
No,
no,
you
don't.
Don't.
Like, no, you don't.
Is this how you approach men on the street? I don't think so. Will you be my friend, sir? No.
Sir.
No one does that.
Sir, please be
fucking weirdo. Leave me alone.
80% of women feel the need to be constantly alert on local streets. Hell yeah. 19% have switched jobs to escape harassment.
It's fucked up.
Yeah. And then did you just read this one? 40% of women and 16% of men say they have been physically harassed in some way, which would be like followed, flashed, or groped.
Mine was just basic street harassment, so okay. The numbers were a little higher, 65% of women and 25%
of
men.
Well, and it's interesting because it says 20% of men who were harassed by women were victims of a lone woman. It was like one woman by themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and for men, the most common harassment is homophobic and transphobic slurs following comments on their body parts.
Right, so to kind of go back to the statistics surrounding all street harassment, so that's 65% of women, 25% of men. Of the women, so of that 65%, 23% had been sexually touched, 20% had been followed, and 9% had been forced to do something sexual.
Yeah.
LGBTQ-identified respondents were more likely to experience street harassment, kind of goes with what you just said. And by the age of 17, 70% of LGBTQ identifying people have experienced street harassment as opposed to 49% of heterosexual people.
Yeah, and they say that 66% of the LGBTQ community will avoid holding hands in public, according to the European Union survey. 50% of people in the LGBTQ plus community say they avoid certain locations, and LGBTQ men are 17% more likely than heterosexual men to experience aggressive harassment and 20% more likely to encounter verbal harassment, which for me just is like a no-brainer.
Yeah, that makes,
you know what I mean? Like,
a ton of sense.
Even those numbers seem low to me, but the thing about holding hands, that's something that with any of like the gay people in my life that they've talked about where like they just don't feel like they can have a normal public relationship without being abused in some way or looked at.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, in lesbian relationships, or people I know who are lesbians have talked about how we've discussed the issue of the male gaze when it comes to lesbian relationships. Mm-hmm. And so they automatically become overtly sexualized in public when they're just trying to have very normal standard displays of affection with their significant others. So that's pretty shitty.
Yeah. Well, and then like two men too, like that's such a, to a lot of people, that's not masculine. That's not how men are supposed to act. Mm-hmm. So I can see where that would be scary as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the problem of catcalling and street harassment is a problem that happens everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not an American problem by any means. It's happened all the time and in every country.
Yeah, in South Asia, they call it Eve teasing.
I heard about that.
And I was
it's
like,
actually recently, kind of ish, in the last couple of years, become illegal. Like, they can arrest you for catcalling.
Love it.
Without a warrant.
Love
essentially.
It.
So, watch yourselves.
In Mexico, they call catcalling, I'm going to say this really wrong because I'm a white girl, piropos? Piropos?
Oh.
I thought that was kind of interesting, too. Different words for it. I wanted to kind of, you know me, I just go on Wikipedia. I'm like, what do you got for me, Wikipedia? And I was reading how in 1944, the rape of, I don't know if it's Ressie or Reese Taylor, prompted Rosa Parks to investigate the crime.
Yes.
And Taylor was a black woman who was kidnapped and gang raped in, is it Abbeville, Alabama?
I don't know.
A-B-B-E-V-I-L-L-E. Sorry, any Alabama listeners. Parks started what was dubbed as the strongest campaign for equal justice to be seen in a decade.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. Like
I believe
that,
they got off, though.
They probably did.
I'm pretty sure they did. And we'll definitely get into,
it's 1944 and it's a black woman.
Right, like, right. And we're going to get into a little bit later on when we start talking about the history of catcalling, we can kind of get into the racial divide of street harassment.
Yeah.
Because there is one, a very, like, dark, glaring racial divide.
Well, and I mean, if you look at sexual harassment in general, if you think about porn or if you think about anything that's sexualized, there is something with people of color that I feel like is hypersexualized.
Absolutely.
In a way.
Well, absolutely. Black men and black women have been fetishized massively. I think I talked about in a past episode the ways in which black women have been deemed to be, like, extremely sexual creatures, like Jezebels, and therefore more deserving of, like, sexual assault.
Right. Or and, that they like it, or that that's part of who they are.
Right, right. Yeah. And so when we start talking about the history of catcalling, which, you know, why don't we just do that right now?
Let's do it.
So catcalling, it comes from the theater. That term comes from the theater, and it goes back to the 17th century and refers to a whistle or a squeaking instrument that was used to express disapproval, which I find really interesting that then that has been co-opted.
I need one of those whistles for when people catcall me. I'll be like,
real loud in their ear. I like that you think it's like a pool whistle or like one of those, like, that's funny.
So I pictured it.
I'd like something a little bit more piercing, like a rape whistle. Why don't we start calling rape whistles catcall whistles and take that word back?
Love it.
So then it went on to be called mashing and being done by mashers, which I thought was super fascinating. And that is a term that's also from the theater, and it started because it was describing male audience members who were
Like hecklers?
Who had crushes on female actresses and would be, like, loud and obnoxious in hopes of, like, holding their attention.
Yeah.
So then this
Guys, they're working. Don't do that.
Yeah. It's a job. They don't love you, okay?
They don't love you, and they never will.
They probably don't even like you. So the term later evolved...
Harsh reality.
Listen. Feisty. The term later evolved into the aggressive male street flirt.
Mm-hmm.
And they were depicted in comics as well-dressed white men whose behavior was often depicted as comical. And we know these kind of, like, comics. These men were depicted as... It's like a Pepe Le Pew, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, they're kind of annoying, but...
Overly romantic.
Right. They're Casanovas, right? They're Don Juans.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, being kind of sweet to you. And they often saw themselves this way, too. They saw themselves as, like, lady killers.
Yeah.
So we start seeing where, and we'll talk about this soon, but we start seeing where culturally catcalling became this masculine thing to do in public.
Yeah.
To bond yourself with other men, almost.
Yeah.
And...
Well, I feel like it's kind of like, it just ties in with, I feel like, dating culture, like, the way that men... have talked about, like, the women they're dating and things like that, like the whole locker room talk and everything like that.
Absolutely.
It's just a more, like, public display.
It's rape
of
culture.
That.
It's like what it is.
100%.
But so using these comic books and kind of using these, like, terms, like a masher, like whatever, kind of almost cutesy terms, with these depictions of these well-dressed, kind of like dandies, white men, it kind of downplayed what street harassment was.
Well, right. It's the story is focused on the harassers, not on the women who are receiving the harassment.
I mean, and also it was kind of played off as this thing that was like, oh yeah, he's a little annoying, but it's just like a quirky, funny kind
it's
of
a character
compliment.
Trait. Yeah, like they would do that a lot in, like, sitcoms, I feel like, too, where it's like the over-romanticized guy or whatever, and it's like it's seen as being, like, sweet or, like, yeah, like you said, a little annoying, but it's a normal thing.
Right, but at the end of the day, you should feel flattered.
Yeah.
However, when you look at black men or immigrants of the time, people who have come in from other spaces, it was considered, especially for black men, to be overtly sexual if you even made eye contact with
a white woman. We've discussed this a lot with when it's, you know, false crimes against black men.
Right.
And who was the woman who accused a black man of raping her and the husband killed him and then she
Emmett Till, who was 14, I believe, 14 years old. I can't remember her name, but fuck that lady. So.
Yeah, fuck her. We don't need to know her name. But I mean, that's something that goes back so far where it's like they were just criminalized for everything and excuses, I feel like, for a lot of things.
Right. I mean, it goes back to Birth of a Nation, right, which we talk about a lot, which was that film in which there was a man in blackface who was considered to be deviant, raped a white woman, and the Ku Klux Klan kind of rode in as,
and, like,
white knights.
Save the day.
Yeah, and they saved the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, black men were considered to be inherently deviant.
Yeah.
And
where a white man can literally be like, hey, baby, what you wearing? What you doing?
Yes.
And, like, a black man will just, like, glance to the right, and then it's like...
But
all hell breaks loose.
There's a theory, and this makes sense to me, that white men felt like they could do that, and I think still mm-hmm. feel like they can do that mm-hmm. because the streets belong to them, and it was a way of kind of
they're
like...
They're safe.
Right, and they're claiming their power
yeah.
like, over the streets, you know what I mean? Because
totally.
It kind of came about at a time when women were moving out of the house more
yeah.
and onto the streets more often.
Yeah.
And they were in their space. They were in their sphere. And so it was kind of a way to, like, assert their dominance and masculinity.
I can see it also as, like, a way for them to display their dominance for people of different races
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Kind of claiming their territory.
I have power to do this when you
when
can't.
You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in the early 20th century, around this time, the Masher period, women started fighting back against this. So
yeah.
it was kind of like an early version of Take Back the Night, where yep. like women would start like taking boxing lessons and using their hatpins.
Self-defense.
I guess
yeah.
self-defense and things like that. And actually, news articles were very encouraging of women to do this.
Yeah.
And then comes the 20s and 30s when you have a more flirtatious kind of woman being depicted on screen with
yeah.
like screen actresses and things like that. And it changed the dialogue around street harassment because it became this thing where, well, women are being openly flirtatious.
Right. Women are displaying themselves in a certain way, looking for certain attention.
Right. They're looking for
yeah.
attention. They're wearing clothes that show more of their body than they ever have before. So
yeah.
they must want me to comment on it.
Of course.
You know, they're
yeah.
wearing more makeup than they ever have
yeah,
before.
Yeah, this is what they want to happen.
Right.
Because why would they be wearing it for themselves or any other reason? They're wearing it for me to notice. Right.
right? I mean, and
yeah.
I'm watching these movies, and this is what these women in these movies want. Like, they
yeah.
actively want to be chased by, like, charming man,
yeah.
you know.
Ugh, the chase.
The chase.
I feel like that's, like, a similar... I mean, there is a whole other, you know, side to that, but I feel like catcalling and the whole the chase can, like, go
right.
together so well because it's, like, a girl is ignoring you, and it's, like, they get frustrated, so they're going to start following you. They're going to start saying more hateful things, and they're going to get angry because you're ignoring them, and it's this, like, whole thing
where
it's, like...
Or they just feel like they are supposed to do that because we as a society have really... encouraged our boys to
100%.
Do that. 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the don't take no for an answer. How to
right.
turn a no into a yes.
Right.
It's that whole thing. And then also just, like, that whole societal thing of, like, of you're deserving of females. Like,
right.
you deserve to have that.
Yeah. And the only way, in some cases, it goes hand in hand with what we talked about already, which is, like, the only way to get them to back off in some cases is to claim, I already belong to another man.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I was reading about, like, these five characteristics of street harassment or whatever. It's from 1994, so it's kind of funny. But it's,
mm-hmm.
like, one of the things is, it says, saying thank you to a harasser encourages further harassment. So it's, like... If you give in to what they want, you're encouraging them to go further. If you ignore them, it's almost like you're just stewing this, like, angry
right.
beast that's
you don't
about to
know.
Come out.
I mean, that's
There's
the
no
thing.
Proper way to respond
there,
to
there
it.
There isn't. And, like, that's the thing that becomes frustrating is because I feel like there are people on both sides of this debate who are kind of yelling, like, do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do this thing to keep yourself safe. Do this thing to keep yourself safe. And
but there's really nothing.
There
it's
isn't.
The only way that we can remain safe is if the people who are doing it just stop.
Right. Or, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and, okay, to go hand in hand with that, I was reading this article, this BBC article that was written in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and they were saying how culturally men have been indoctrinated into it, into, like, street harassment, and it's been a privilege for them to walk down the street fantasizing about women. The
Definitely.
Culture hasn't checked the behavior. Because society has perpetrated this as a cultural norm, men tend to engage in street harassment as a way to prove their masculinity, says Northeastern University Associate Professor of Sociology, Catherine Zippel. Oftentimes, it's not really about the women. It's just about the men performing masculine acts for each other and establishing a pecking order amongst themselves.
Definitely.
What's really going on is a dynamic among men. So
yeah.
when it comes down to, like, them just deciding to stop, I think a big part of that is other men
checking them.
Make sure in your group of friends, as a man,
yeah.
you can say, "Hey, dude, this isn't cool around me."
And that's what's really hard for me because, like, I've dated people who, you know, don't think that's cool. who don't believe in, you know, men catcalling women or treating women badly. But then it's like you get into a group of friends and it's almost like they feel like it's not their place to say something, or they feel awkward about it, or they're like, oh, I just ignore it. And you can't do that. And like, I get that it's awkward to bring up to your friend that they're doing something that isn't cool. Like, I get it. And it may cause tension in a friendship, but I feel like it's better to be more forward and to say something than just continually let it happen. Because think of the person that's on the receiving end of it.
Right, because...
sorry that your friendship gets a little awkward for a minute.
I mean, and honestly, it should get awkward because your friend's doing something fucked up.
And he should feel badly about it. And if his reaction is anger toward you, then that's his reaction.
Right, but exactly. I mean, if this is more about men's interactions with each other and the way that they want to assert dominance in public towards women and to other men, then the only way... look, women have been saying forever that we don't like this. It hasn't done anything. You need to make it culturally unacceptable for men to do this, because I was also
reading... by holding each other accountable.
Right. I was reading that women, obviously, are most likely to be harassed when they are alone.
Of course.
However, men are just as likely to be alone as they are to be in a group of other men.
Yeah.
They don't always harass by themselves. They will do it
Guy outside of 7-Eleven.
Right. I mean, and I've told you this. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but I was followed around in a car full of men whenever I was walking in an alley by myself.
Not okay.
And they slowed down and they drove next to me.
Literally one of my biggest fears.
It was terrifying, because if they'd wanted to, there was like five of them. They could have jumped out and pulled me into the car at any moment.
Yeah.
And that's exactly... there was in no way in their mind could they have thought that that was paying me a compliment. They were trying to scare me.
Yes, of course.
And that's the thing, is we need all men to start holding their friends accountable, because most likely they are catcalling in front of you, or they have done.
Well, and then even if you're not with a group of friends that behave that way, I think it's important for men also just to speak up in general and to be allies and like talk about this with people, or even just post about it on social media and kind of show your allyship. Because I feel like the more that men speak out about it just in general, the more and more it will maybe be ingrained into the minds of others.
Right. And also keep your eyes open to it, because I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast either, so excuse me if I'm repeating if I'm repeating myself. But I had watched a thing a while back where a person had gone out on the street and asked a bunch of women, have you ever been sexually harassed or assaulted? And a lot of them said yes. Not every single one, but a lot. Mm-hmm. Definitely the majority. And then she went out and asked a bunch of men, have you ever sexually assaulted anyone? Or do you know any...
I think you did mention this before.
Yeah. Do you know any male friends who have sexually assaulted anyone? And they said, all of them said no.
Yeah.
And so either you're lying, or you don't recognize it as sexual harassment.
It could totally be both.
It could totally be either or. But that's the thing. You need to start opening your eyes to this. Just because you don't experience it doesn't mean it's something that you should ignore.
No.
You know, you need to recognize it.
Yeah, and it's not that it's like a man's responsibility necessarily to stand up for a woman. I don't necessarily feel that that's the case. But if you are in a situation where you see somebody, like you posted that video on Facebook of that girl where the guy is like whispering in her ear and she's like,
right, and
clearly
she's like rolling her eyes.
Like, go away.
Yeah.
It's like, that's when I was like, that's when Keegan would swoop in and be like, hey girl, come to the bathroom with me, or like something.
Well, yeah.
But sometimes that's not the case. You don't have those people around you.
Well.
And you have to be aware. It's like, it's not a knight in shining armor thing. You don't have to do whatever. But like, be aware of what is going on. And if that person needs help, tell the bartender.
Right.
Tell somebody who works there. You don't have to do anything yourself necessarily, but make sure that person is okay.
Well, and to speak on that, like, women, and I feel like this has probably always been the case, definitely for as long as I've been old enough to go out with my girlfriends, women have this built-in defense system where we protect each other.
Yes.
Like, women protect each other. You better believe that every group of girlfriends, if they go out together, they have a system in place to pull their friends away.
Oh, yeah. Even if it's just been like, it'll just be a few sentences. You know what I mean? It's not like we sit and plot and plan, but it's like...
No, but I mean,
it's something that we talk about a lot, and that was something that, like, I'm like starting to kind of go out a little bit more here and there, but like when I went out with Keegan and her friends that night and we were at the bar and that guy was like putting his butt on me and, like, all over me. Like, my boyfriend at the time was there and didn't even do anything. And Keegan came in and was like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, women definitely have this more, and not to say that men don't do it.
Because guys see it more as harmless.
Right, like, they're see it as harmless.
Oh, whatever, he's just doing
this.
Or
I'm here and nothing really bad is going to happen
to you.
That
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I felt incredibly violated and uncomfortable and didn't want to be there. I wanted to be with my friends. I didn't want to be there and have some guy rub his butt on me. And like, I'm sorry, it's disgusting.
And the thing is also, like, whether it's your female friend or your male friend, I do believe that there is something about men doing it to each other, to hold each other accountable. I do believe that that's more effective.
It's going to make a bigger difference.
Yeah, it's going to be more effective. However...
Well, because women are also seen as irrational.
Sure.
It's like, oh, they're all the girls are swooping in. Okay, whatever. Sorry.
Right, but I still feel like shame can go a long way. Even if it's a woman, if a, like whenever I went over there and physically put myself between you and him, it was a strong indicator to him that this isn't okay, and we see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I feel like even though he can be like, ugh, crazy girls or whatever, there is an element of shame there that he needs to feel.
I feel
now.
Like I'm going to start like pulling out like nanny mom, like, Madigan when that happens. Like, shame on you.
Oh,
I'm
God,
disappointed that you would behave this way.
Yeah.
Because, like, that should be, like...
I want to tell your mom.
Yeah, I'm going to tell your mom on you.
Yeah. I was talking about this on my other podcast because we were talking about how the men who, like, reach out to women on dating apps and say, like, awful fucking things to them, how there is a whole group of women out there who will find their moms on Facebook.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then message their moms.
I've read so many of those things where, like, there was one where it was, like, a girl who was, like, science partners with this guy. She sounded like she was, like, in high school or something. And, like, the guy messaged her and she didn't like it. So she, like, found his mom on Facebook and messaged and... She was like, he is grounded. You will be getting a written apology. I did not raise him this way. I'm so sorry. You know,
shame.
Like,
shame. Yeah. Shame goes a long way.
Shame.
Yeah.
Princess Bride?
Oh, I was thinking Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Also good.
I used to be so scared of that scene. That scene when the woman is screaming shame and the other scene with, like, the swamp creature.
Uh-huh.
Could not handle it when I was little.
Love that movie.
I love that movie, too. It's so good. Do you want to talk a little bit about Take Back the Night?
Yes, let's do it.
So it began in, like, the 60s, and then it had a kind of a resurgence in the 70s. It's an international protest against sexual violence against women. They are a nonprofit organization now, too, that aims to end all forms of sexual violence, including street harassment. And that's something, for me, that I feel like is such a beautiful thing. Like, I've seen so many photos of women where they're carrying, like, the candles, and they're walking together, and it's such, like, a sense of solidarity.
Yeah.
And I feel like just the name of that group is so...
Take back, it's empowering.
It's so empowering and meaningful because it's like the night is what we're scared of.
Yeah.
I'm not scared to go buy cigarettes in the middle of the day. I'm scared at night when I have to get out of my car. I don't like getting gas at night.
Me neither.
I don't like doing any sort of shopping at night. It makes me very scared unless I'm in a very well-lit area with a lot of other people around. Like, I don't like it.
Anytime I have to go, like, when I used to have, like, auditions at theater companies at nighttime, and you might have to park kind of far away.
Yeah.
Like, in LA, it's hard to find parking. And it made me very nervous to have to walk to and from by myself.
Well, when we first started recording... And I would be parking on the street, like, you and Anthony would walk me to my car.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's part of me that's like, guys, I'm fine, whatever, like, I don't want to bother you, whatever.
No, but better safe than sorry.
Yeah, like,
you don't know.
My mom, like, I will call her at 3 a.m. if I have to. If I need to go somewhere or do anything, if I'm out, like, she would rather have me call her. I'll call my best friend Katie. I'll call my mom. I'll call anybody just to have someone on the phone.
I've pretended to be on the phone many times.
So many times.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where, you know, like, our acting degrees come in.
Oh, yeah. I can have a full conversation by myself.
Oh, for sure. Another thing that I found really interesting was the Wall Street, I always say this word wrong, is it Ogle or Ogle?
Ogle, I think.
Ogle? I thought it was Ogle. I don't know. The Ogle or Ogle Inn, where these women would stand on Wall Street.
Yes.
And they would hold signs, and then they catcalled men as they walked by in hopes of raising awareness. And I thought that
was
really cool.
We talked about that in our second wave episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just reminding you
all. Which is fascinating.
I thought that was cool. I feel like that would, like, even now just be such a good idea of, like, going to a place, like, in the 70s, Wall Street, like, such a male-populated ego area, and kind of, like, giving them a taste of their own medicine.
Well, that's a good example, because they did that in, if I remember correctly, and maybe I'm not, but they did that in response to, there was a woman who actually had, like, news articles written about her because men would show up oftentimes from Wall Street to this poor woman. Like, I just can't even imagine what her life must have been like because she had these crazy dimensions. She was like a 38, 24, 36 or something like that. Like, she had crazy...
36, 24, 36.
Yeah, she had these crazy, like, hourglass dimensions.
Yeah.
So... men would meet her at the train station when she would get off the, because they knew her schedule.
Nope.
And
that's
and
creepy.
And holler at her. And she had like new, like she was written up in the paper and things like that. So that's when these women like swooped in and they were like, we're going to do this in solidarity with her. It really was like a solidarity story because they don't understand how. Again, it's not
to
a compliment.
Learn somebody's fucking schedule and show up when
it's
her train
weird.
Is. That's really fucking weird.
Yeah.
That's not cute, guys.
It's super weird.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And, you know, while we're on the subject of trains, we can talk a little bit about how women are most often catcalled when they are alone, which we just addressed.
Yeah.
But usually during commuting, which I can totally speak to because I took public transportation in Los Angeles for...
You're waiting. Like, you're kind of, like, at the whim of something else. Like,
oh,
you're...
Let
you
me
can't
tell
you. Do anything. And then you're in a bus with strangers and you can't go anywhere.
My very first encounter with riding the bus.
So please do.
It took me a lot of... It was very anxiety-provoking for me to try and figure out the bus.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
It was very daunting to me. It seemed very big. It was very hard. And my first interaction on the bus did not do anything to make that better.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay, I need to take this bus number to get where I'm going. So I got on the bus. Little did I know, I got on the bus going the wrong direction.
Oh, no.
So I got on the bus. I sat down in a window seat. You know, a guy comes on the bus, has a face tattoo. Might I add?
Of course he does. Of course he has a face tattoo.
Listen, I know lots of good people have face tattoos. This was not one of them.
No, there's also a lot of really shitty people that have face tattoos.
He sat next to me.
Did he sit, like, not in the aisle, but, like, right next to you?
Right next to me.
What the fuck,
and
man?
I'm by a window.
Yeah.
And he's in my space, constantly, like,
nope.
talking to me.
Nope.
Trying to hit on me. I'm trying to ignore him, but also trying to be polite.
It's like, what do you do? Like, there's nothing
there's
you can do.
There's nothing you can do. Also, I was going in the wrong direction.
So you're trying to figure out what the fuck to do
right,
next.
So I
would just start pulling that thing, like, get me off.
There was no lever on this
bus. Oh, no.
There were buttons. You could push the button to get off, but I was going in the wrong direction, and I was going towards the end of the line because it was the end of the day. So by the time I got down there, everyone had to get off the bus. So
including Mr. Creepy.
Right.
Man.
He got off with me.
Oh my God.
I was still stuck there with him. From that moment on,
I would have called your ex immediately. Just
he
had
was
him on
at,
the phone.
He was at work and neither one of us had a car.
Oh,
so it was
God.
Like
well no, but just to have him on the phone.
Oh yeah, he was at work. He would have picked up. But like
should have called me.
So I managed to get another bus going back the other way, but ever since that day, every time I got on the bus, my sunglasses stayed on. I always chose a seat in the aisle unless I absolutely had to.
Yep.
I always had my earbuds in.
Yep.
And there is, they talk about this blank face that women put on when they get on public transit. And it's your armor. That's the article I was reading
but
referred
then when
to it
you
as your
look
armor.
That way, it's like the other night when I was just walking to my car and he's like, why are you upset? Why are you sad? What's wrong, girl?
Oh, sure.
I'm like,
I mean, you're told to smile all the time, but there is this thing about there's a joke on my other podcast about how I have, like, resting invitation face. Like, some people have, like, resting bitch face.
Yeah.
I have, like, come talk to me face. Like, I'm nice.
Yeah.
And, like, I smile at people on the street and things like that. And it makes people
know.
Think that they can
I
talk to me.
I get, like, an air about you where, like, you'd be nice, but, like, don't fuck with you.
Well, I think it's on the street. Like, when I'm walking, I have an instinct to, if I make eye contact with someone, I will smile at
and
them.
Instinct to smile.
Right.
It's our Midwest charm.
It is. Yes. My mama raised me to be nice to people.
Of
it doesn't mean I want you to fuck me.
Yeah.
seriously.
Can we get that on a button?
Just
mama raised me to be nice to people. Doesn't mean I want you to fuck me.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. But so there is this element of like needing to protect yourself on public transit and you put on this armor of like, don't talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're a generally really nice person.
That's very hard for me because again, I don't know if it's like a Midwest thing or what it is, but like my mom will stop and talk to anybody. Like on Venice Beach, she'll take everybody's mixtapes. She's like, yes, please sign
no,
it
no.
if you're famous one day. Yes, okay. Like, that's
gotta just keep walking.
I know, right? That's, like, how she is. And, like, moving to LA, I've had to kind of learn to be a little bit harder faced. But I, like, if you have resting invitation face, I have a face that's just like, come talk to me. I want to hear all about your life story. And I'm one of those people that likes
Listen,
to talk to people.
Take the bus for 2 months. That will be gone.
Well, but that's the thing is it's like, it's not that I want it to be. There's just something about me.
Oh, no.
I don't know if there's something that I look like where I just look like the type of person that like wants to hear all your shit.
I feel like I'm the same way. Like, I feel like I'm the same way. People like to talk to me. People open up to me very
Which
easily.
Which is great.
But on the bus?
Yeah.
You don't do that. On public transit, I'm telling you, you learn very quickly. Look ahead.
Yeah.
Don't look at anyone. Don't acknowledge anyone.
Because
you see weird shit go down.
Oh, yes.
And then
don't look at the weird shit. Don't acknowledge
don't
the
acknowledge
weird shit.
Don't acknowledge any of it. If someone's yelling on the bus,
oh, my God.
It.
When I would take the subway in New York, I was just like, look down, look
right,
down.
Exactly.
And it's weird because like I would take my phone out and my ex would be like, put your phone away. Okay, sorry. Because, like, don't take anything valuable out of your, like, pocket or bags or anything. Just, like, hold on to everything, look down at the floor, and wait.
And speaking...
don't fuck with anybody and, like, just stay in your lane.
Yeah, speaking of the subway and catcalling, there was a recent study that was put out, I mean, seriously, like, last week, that talks about the quote-unquote pink tax for women to ride the subway. And it's not really a pink tax in the way that we are used to thinking of it, which is
like tampons
razors or
and,
tampons or anything that's pink is automatically more expensive.
Right.
It's not that, but what it is that women feel so unsafe on public transit because of street harassment and other forms of sexual harassment that they will oftentimes stop taking the subway after a certain hour and call taxis and Ubers.
But because this means, your life means more than paying a few extra bucks.
If you have that, though. Like, yeah. Because it does become a class issue at a certain point, because women are spending, you know, I don't remember what the number is, but it's an astronomical number that's larger than what men are spending to ride public transit.
Yeah.
To get to and from work because they feel safer in a taxi or an Uber. But then it becomes an issue of the only women on this train now are poor women.
Yeah.
Women who literally cannot afford to do that. And that
and
becomes an issue as
and
well.
And they're victims, too. You
and
know.
There are certain parts of the world, like I know Japan has it, where they have women-only train cars.
Yeah.
Which is a really good idea because it makes you feel safe, but also, like, I don't know.
It shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah, there's a weird feeling around having to segregate the genders because men can't get their shit together.
Well, that's kind of how there was, like, Chariot, I know, was going to happen with, like, basically Uber with, like, women drivers. For women.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I was going to say, it's something for me, too. Like, if I'm by myself and I take an Uber, like, I definitely have my guard up.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Like, I always screenshot. If I'm by myself in an Uber, I screenshot my driver's information and his picture.
That's
and
a
I
really
send
good idea.
It to my friend and my boyfriend.
That's a great idea. I should do that.
Yeah, do that because it has their license number. It has their picture. You know, definitely do that because I've been in situations in Ubers by myself where I'm like, I had a guy who just wanted to talk to me, I guess.
Yeah.
And he kept purposely missing turns. To get me home, it took me, like, an extra 20 minutes to get home.
Well, that's extra money, too. What the fuck, man?
Well, not an Uber, because it's a flat fee, so it's fine. But, like, it was uncomfortable. Every time you don't take me where I need to go, it makes me nervous. It makes me scared.
Yes, because it's, like, there's so many stories where it's, like, and then he took a wrong turn, and you're, like, oh,
right.
Shit.
And you can't get out of the car. Yeah. There's nothing you can do. It's his car.
Tuck and roll, man.
So, very scary.
Yeah. My God. I remember, just talking about this, I remember, like, one of the first times I remember ever being catcalled was when I was, like, 15 years old. I was in Florida with my friend Emily, and we bought these shorts that, like, looking back, they were very short. But, like, you see lots of stuff now today,
too. And also not the point. Yeah, short shorts, whatever.
I know. I'm, like, 15 years old. I'm shaped like a beanstalk, whatever. Like, and we would walk from our hotel over this bridge to kind of like the shopping area and get ice cream or whatever. And every time we walked, we would get honked at.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what is going on? And it was so weird. And then we finally were like, is it the shorts? Like, it was the weirdest thing. I was 15 years old.
It could have been the shorts, but also, I mean, at that age, I don't think, which this is gross, I don't think I was ever. I still get catcalled. I still experience street harassment, but I don't think I ever experienced it more than I did
when you were young.
Whenever I was in my mid-teens.
Yeah.
Probably like 14, 15, 16.
For real. And that's
when
not
I
something.
Most.
Maybe in Minnesota we wear more clothes because it's cold. I don't know. But like,
I've definitely gotten catcalled in full clothes
that's
before.
That's true.
You
but
know
like,
what I mean?
Was that week in Florida where we were just like, what the fuck? And like, it's just so.
It's just Florida.
It's Florida. It's Florida's fault. But I just remember that as being kind of like my first experience of like feeling really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, and then, okay, so this is a good time, I guess, to segue into women particularly talking about how they don't feel uncomfortable by catcalls and they do feel flattered by it. And what's the difference between a compliment and a catcall?
Please tell me.
And listen, what you should do and our listeners should do is go to Stuff Mom Never Told You, and they have like a 5-minute video on the difference between catcalls and compliments, which is
love it.
So funny.
Awesome.
And like, you should definitely watch that. I mean, I have a lot of problems with women saying that they feel flattered. I know a woman wrote an article a couple years ago about how catcalling is flattering.
There's a whole thing about how it's like, well, ugly woman. Women don't get catcalled. That means you're beautiful, blah, blah, blah. It's like everybody gets catcalled.
Or you're flatter, or it's flattering if it's an attractive young man.
Yeah.
And not flattering if it's not.
Did you watch How I Met Your Mother?
I did.
So there's like an episode where Lily's getting rid of all of her clothes and then she's like giving Robin this one dress that she really wants. And she's like, I got a 2-syllable damn in that dress. And she's like walking down the street and some guy's like, damn. And then she like walks away smiling. And I was like,
that show is
nope.
So problematic.
I know. Listen to the episode of Your Fave is Problematic the How I Met Your Mother episode is spot. If you're a fan of How I Met Your Mother, listen to that episode. It's so spot on.
That show started to make me uncomfortable as the misogyny in that show runs deep.
I can't really watch it anymore. I used to love that show, and I really can't watch it anymore.
Me neither.
But like, that just reminds me of that, where she was like, I can't give up this dress. I got a 2-syllable damn in that dress. I'm like, ugh.
I mean, and again, societally, I think we were raised to believe that it was supposed to be flattering. It wasn't until I got older that I realized how messed up that was. I remember my mom, the first time I remember being like really catcalled was when I was 13, and I was with
too young.
And these men were definitely like in their mid-20s, at least their mid-20s.
Guys, that's gross.
And I looked 13, guys. It's not like I was like...
That's the thing. I told you, I was built like a beanpole. Like, I was this skinny, little, tiny, like, I look young now. Imagine how I looked when I was like 12, 13, 14, 15.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
I mean, look of age.
I not only looked 13, but I was with my mother, which is really messed up, but I remember my mom being outraged for me, but me feeling almost like a sense of like pride, like,
yeah,
this is what adulthood is supposed to be
like. Well, and it's the first time that maybe
to find me attractive
that you were you were noticed for your attractiveness,
like,
totally.
Yes, and so it felt like, I feel like we condition girls to seek that attention,
yes,
and in doing that, on the same side of that coin, we condition men to think that that is okay.
Well, you
and
know,
I think it's just been recently that we started having the conversation that it's not a compliment.
Yeah. I mean, if you look back in history, like, women were expected to be married by a certain time. They were expected, you know, their life timeline was a certain way. So it's like, any man that paid any attention to you, you're supposed to just be like, yeah, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a kind of a different expectation that I feel like is still very ingrained in our culture today.
Absolutely.
And we all have such a need because of society's way of telling us that we're not attractive enough, telling us that we're not good enough, that when anybody, even the creepiest dude on the street, tells a 13-year-old that they're good looking,
right,
or it gives them a catcall, whatever, there's something in you that, as much as you may be disgusted, there's also kind of a pat on the back situation where you're like, how do I feel here?
Right.
Should I feel good about myself because this other person finds me attractive and that's validation?
Yeah, as I've gotten older, I mean, definitely, like, listen, as much as anyone wants to deny it, validation and feeling validated is just part of the human experience.
Exactly.
It's something that we inherently want as human beings. We want to feel validated. We want to feel beautiful. We want to feel those things. I think as I've gotten older, I've definitely gotten more fearful because of those experiences, because I've had men try and get me into their cars before.
Yeah.
I've had...
Well, because when you're young, it's the first time. And you're like, I don't know about this whole thing. He thinks I'm cute, whatever. And as you get older and you start seeing the progression of things,
and
the more scared you're going to get.
More nefarious people out there. You know, you might your first interaction may not be as scary as someone literally physically trying to force you into a car, which did happen to me.
I cannot even imagine.
And, walking, you know, in an alley and having a whole car full of guys. Or
my biggest fear is being chased. I cannot even play tag, you guys. I can't do it. I have, like, nightmares about being chased or being followed. And, like, I walk my dog at night, and, like, I live in a pretty good area, and I'm, like, constantly, like, looking.
Yeah.
I say I live in a pretty good area, like, and kind of, like, nothing's ever completely safe. But, like, I'm constantly, like, aware of my surroundings, of cars, of people, of everything else. Luckily, I have a dog with me who's also really paranoid about everything.
I think we need to start, though, because, not that I put myself in those situations, you know, not that it was my fault or I'm saying that at all. It was not.
And it shouldn't, and that's the thing, is that you shouldn't have to justify.
No.
Because if you need to cross an alley to get to your home or to get anywhere, or if it's quicker.
Right.
What have you?
Yes.
That's not your fault.
No, absolutely not. But the thing that I wanted to say about that is just that because I was so naive, like, when I moved to LA, and so trusting of people,
same,
and so believing that, like, no one really wanted to hurt you, I think I opened myself up to a lot of situations. I think we need to tell our girls.
Yeah.
Like, you need to prepare yourself.
We need to tell our girls that we need to prepare, and we need to tell our boys.
Absolutely.
What is and is not appropriate.
Absolutely.
And I feel, I'm not a mother yet, but I do take care of children, and I feel an immense responsibility whenever I hear him talk about girls or anything around surrounding that matter to know how he should react in certain situations. I'm very lucky that the little kid that I take care of is like the most empathetic, loving, sweet, like would stand up for anybody kind of kid.
Yeah.
But I want to continue to enforce that. So Absolutely. When he gets older, he will remember that babysitter from when he was 6 years old, when he's 16.
Right.
That said something to him, because I remember what my babysitters told me when I was little, and I want him to remember the way that he should be treating women. Right.
And I think we're moving towards that. I really do. Like, I made a Facebook status last week really praising younger generations.
Yeah.
And praising Gen Z, because I do feel like, listen, there's a ways to go. Of course, it takes a long time to undo that kind of like toxic culture that we've built up.
Well, and we're building more toxic culture.
Absolutely. And things are changing and evolving. But I do think because the next generation is so seemingly socially conscious, yeah, I think that we are moving towards a place where where our young people are being more like, no, no, that's not okay.
That's the thing, is it's like people hate on Gen Z all the time. I'm like, I fucking love Gen Z.
I mean, look, I love millennials too. I think millennials are great, but I think that Gen Z, even more so, even more than we had, they have a different kind of mindset around social consciousness and awareness that we didn't have.
And it's, well, we talked about this when we talked about 9/11, where there is a certain political shift, I feel like, where younger kids these days are more and more involved. I need to quit smoking, guys, but I was buying cigarettes, and they had this, like, squeezy, like, Donald Trump thing where you squeeze his head, and it's like,
ah! Eyes come out, yeah.
Yeah, and so I bought that for tea, and I was, like, laughing at it. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to get this for the six-year-old that I take care of. And the guy behind me is like, he knows who that is. Like, he knows what's going on. I'm like, oh, yes.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I think that the state of our world right now requires that. I think
it does.
That we are, there's, in a way, there's so much more socially and politically conscious because it's
I think that's better.
No, it's
because
good.
Because people treat kids so much like they can't handle things or they can't process things. Which,
but I think that shift could have happened without our world literally starting to fall apart.
100%.
Like, that's the thing.
I wish that I had had that sort of like reality growing up, which I did a lot, honestly. I really did. But I wish there was even more of that reality growing up for me to start understanding politics and understanding the way that the world works at a younger age.
Right. It's sad that it came about because this stuff is constantly in the news in a really negative way.
And there is a balance for me where it's like, I shield him from a lot of the really, really ugly, awful stuff. But at the same time, I want him to be aware of just the basis of it. He doesn't need to know the details. He doesn't need to be scared, anything like that. But for him just to be aware of the things going on, the fact that he doesn't even like to pretend play guns.
Yeah, that's good.
Little things like that I feel like is so important, the way that we're slowly changing for the next generation.
Right.
And hopefully we can continue to teach these young boys and young girls, for the girls to protect themselves.
Right.
Teaching them self-defense, teaching them to actually use their voice and to be honest with the way that they feel.
Absolutely.
And with boys, to teach them that this rape culture that has been happening for years and years and years isn't okay.
Agreed.
So I think that we're heading toward better place.
We are.
I really do.
And I know that that's a really good place to wrap it up. I just really wanted to touch on this very, very quickly.
Please.
Because it's something that we didn't touch on already, and I don't want people to think that we are overlooking or forgetting it.
Yeah.
Catcalling, street harassment against trans women.
Yeah. Well,
is
yes.
So.
And against trans men, too.
Against trans men, but trans women in
especially.
Particular. Trans women in particular, I want to highlight that. Of course, other members of the LGBTQ community, as we've already said, disproportionate rates of sexual assault and harassment.
Trans women, I feel like, with any women's issue that we discuss, it is magnified.
Absolutely.
For trans women.
Especially
when
issues of harassment.
And that's the thing that I wanted listeners to think to remember. When we talk about women, we are not just talking about cisgendered women.
Right. But the statistics are different.
I was
going to
say,
women.
The statistics are different, but there, like, we are never going to exclude trans women from the conversation.
Right, of course.
Women. But the statistics when it comes to trans women, because, again, like, we were talking about the fetishizing of women of color when we talk about Black women, Asian women. When you talk about trans women, again, for years, it's something that's been so fetishized.
Absolutely.
But also, while it's been fetishized, it's become this, like, weird, like... It's like a shameful thing
right,
for them, but they feel like they have to be ridiculed for it, and it's awful.
Yeah, yeah, it's awful. So trans women are far more likely to be at the receiving end of street harassment and really every other form of sexual harassment and really every other form of sexual or physical violence.
Yeah.
So whatever we experience as cisgendered women, it's magnified times 100 for trans women.
Yeah.
So that's just something to keep thinking about and making sure that we are protecting our LGBTQ community in general and our trans women in specific.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, we talk about men holding each other responsible and women holding each other responsible. That is not just talking about cisgendered people. If you see a transgendered woman being harassed, it is just as much your responsibility to stand up for that person as it is to stand up for a cisgender
woman. Right. I saw, I was actually at Panera, and there was this guy who was just being real cagey in general. Like, he came in and, like, filled up his drink inside and then, like, went back out and, like, almost started a fight with somebody because they, like, laughed or something.
Yeah.
And then there was a trans woman outside, and he said something to her, and she went off on him.
Yeah.
And luckily, she, like, took out her phone, and she had other people there.
Yeah.
And, but the entire time, I was sitting inside and eating with Anthony.
You're aware. You're like, I'm watching this whole thing just in case.
And I was like, just in case. And I told Anthony, I'm like, I'm watching this just in case, like, I need to call the police.
Oh,
like,
of course.
Just in case, like, I need to come get someone else to step in here.
Yeah.
Because I don't want her to feel like she's alone or unsafe.
No.
You know?
At all.
So it's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
And know that you at least need to be aware and at most need to find a way to safely step in situations like that. And men, if you are listening, same goes for you with all the women in your life or with anyone in your life who you see being harassed. Don't stand idly by if you're in the car with a friend who is yelling out the window at women walking down the street.
Yeah, and it is a weird thing with men where it's like if it's their sister or their friend, they have a certain like protectiveness, but it's like...
That's someone's sister and someone's friend.
Exactly.
Dude. Yeah.
It's somebody to somebody.
Right.
And like it doesn't matter what girl it is, like treat them the way that you would treat the women in your life that you love the most.
Right.
Stand up for them. Do something. Don't put yourself in danger. But there are so many things that you can do to help keep this woman safe and protect them. And also be careful of when you're trying to make that other person feel safe that you're not coming off in the wrong way either.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But
just
there's...
be conscious.
Be conscious, but there's ways to do it. If you feel like you need to call the police or anything else, there are definitely ways that you can do that.
Absolutely.
So.
And also, though, with that said, because I don't want this to come across wrong either, don't just willy-nilly call the cops either, because that can oftentimes escalate into something violent. So just use your best judgment to make sure that the people around you
according
stay safe.
According to the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I could give you more specific information.
By situation basis.
Yeah.
Okay,
this
well.
This was a really fun episode to talk to
you. I know,
with you.
And it was a fun episode to research. I know it's kind of a weird topic, and we have very negative experiences, obviously, with street harassment and catcalling, but it's a good one to kind of try and break down for people.
So. I was worried. I was like, what are we going to talk about for an entire hour? And we just like
we did it,
man.
Hammered through it.
I shouldn't worry. You and I can talk forever.
I know. I'm
about
a pretty good
anything.
Talker.
I know, right? That's what people tell me. It's fine. You guys, thank you. Thank you so much for listening. The mini episode is going to be posted before this, but I just wanted to give you guys a reminder that our schedules have changed with when we're uploading our episodes. We are now going to be uploading our mini episodes on Fridays.
Yep.
And just as normal, our full length episodes are going to be on Mondays.
It just worked out better for our schedules, guys.
Yeah, I don't have work on Thursdays, and then we don't have to be as late, and it kind of eases some of the rushness.
Right, and it also allows us to provide you with fresher news in general.
Yeah.
Because we're typically going to be recording now the night before we release
yes,
the episode. So
exactly.
It kind of helps us in that way.
Exactly. So thank you guys for being so understanding about all of that and for keeping up with all of our nonsense. We really appreciate it. I want to give a big thank you for those who have reviewed us this week. We've gotten a couple really great reviews that made me cry.
Yes, Madigan cried.
Madigan cried. I mean, I cry really easily, but you guys, it's like, doesn't mean that it doesn't mean something. So thank you so much. Please continue to review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to us. Listen to us on Radio Public if you feel like it helps us a little bit.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And don't forget to send us your Q&A questions because
yes,
we are going to do a Q&A episode.
We haven't gotten any really emails in a while from you guys of stories, Sister Solidarity coming out, anything like that. We really do need your Q&A stories. We really want to make an entire full-length episode based on your questions and answers. So if you're listening and you want to send us a Q&A question, that would be great. Tell your friend that listens that they should send in something. We really just kind of want to have a back and forth conversation with you guys during that time and kind of reminisce on our first year on
yeah,
this little journey.
It's a mile marker.
I'm really excited.
Me
it's
too.
Gonna be fun.
Me too.
You can find us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. If you have any of those stories or anything to send us, you can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a business page and a group page. What else? What am I missing?
That's it. I think.
That's it?
I think so. And I guess if you are in the States, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Because it will be coming up soon for you
yeah,
guys.
So. It's going to be good. It's going to
yeah,
be a good Thanksgiving.
All the food.
I'm going to make bacon-wrapped Brussels sprouts and
yummy.
Sweet potatoes.
Listen, I understand that the roots of Thanksgiving suck, but right now...
That's what we should talk about next week is
yeah,
problematic
yeah,
Thanksgiving.
The roots of Thanksgiving are terrible, but now, to me, it just means gathering with friends and eating good food. That's what I do every Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I just made my first pecan pie that I took to work, and it was delicious.
That's my favorite, Keegan!
And I'm going to make another one for Thursday.
You guys, Keegan also makes really good fudge. I remember that from like
oh,
years
fudge
ago.
Is good. Fudge is delicious.
That fudge is so good.
And
all right.
I'll also be making green bean casserole.
Yeah. Love green
Amazing.
Bean casserole.
So tell
so
us what
excited.
You're having for Thanksgiving,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, guys, just like send
just
us shit.
Just talk to us. We
just
like,
send us shit.
We'd like
great.
To talk to you.
We like to talk to you so much. All right, so before things get weirder, with that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye, guys.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I...
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.